Hey everybody, it's Mike Jeffers, ChicagoJazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine, and welcome to Talkin' Jazz. I am here on location at Roosevelt University with the great, the legendary, I know you like to be called legendary right to your face, Paul Wertico.
That means you're old, of course, right?
So Paul Wertico, we're going to sit down here, we're going to talk about, he's got so much stuff coming up that before we came on camera, I already told him that we got to do a feature interview. So we're not going to delve way into his past, which could take another 2 or 3 hours of us talking, and then we would never get to the stuff we need to talk to. So we're going to do a feature, so be aware of that. That's going to come out in the fall at some point. We got to figure it out, because you're going to hear his schedule in a minute, and you're going to say, Mike, when are you going to do a feature interview with Paul? Because he's not in town. So we're going to make that happen. But just to set this up, we're at Roosevelt University where you teach, and you just finished up your classes, so we're kind of in between his classes, and then he's got gigs coming up from now until the end of the year, so let's focus on a few things that you have coming up,
sure.
And I'll just set them up, and then I'll let you talk.
I like to talk too, but man, you got that energy too, so I love listening to it.
So the first thing you've got coming up that we definitely need to talk about is the drum show, right? The Chicago Drum Show,
right.
May 18th and 19th, and then you're also partnering that with Hey Nani gig in Arlington Heights that same weekend. So let's start with that. You've been associated with the Chicago Drum Show for many years. I think, what is it, about the 18th or 20th year or something like that?
I think the show itself is like the 29th year.
Is it really that old? Yeah. Okay.
And this will probably be my fourth clinic, I think, because the first time I did it, I remember I had flown right home from Italy, I think, and then got off and then did this clinic, and it was like, whew, that was interesting. And then a few years back, I just went just to go to the show, because it's a really great show. I mean, it's a combination of clinics and master classes, but also, you know, people can shop for, like, you know, vintage gear, and yeah, it's just a really loose hang. Everyone just, it's beautiful.
Millions of drummers there. Everybody knows everybody, basically, and everybody's reconnecting after a year.
Absolutely. And Rob Cook runs it. He's a great guy. Mm-hmm. So a couple years ago, I just went there just to hang out and watch some clinics, and Rob comes up to me as I'm going through the door. He goes, Paul, Lenny DiMuzio just canceled his clinic. He's sick. Can you do a clinic in an hour? And I was like, sure. So then I went, and I kind of went from booth to booth and kind of picked out some stuff and then just did the clinic. So then the following year, I did another official clinic and master class. And so again, this year, I'll be doing both. I'm going to be doing, I think I'm doing the clinic at... what time is it? I think it's at 1 o'clock, I believe.
Well, we'll link it all up too, because it's online, so we'll link it all up.
And then the master class the next day, I think, is at noon. But so when this came about, the club Hey Nani, which is a great new club.
Great new club right in Arlington Heights, downtown Arlington Heights.
Right, right. Yeah. And Chip called me from there and said, you know, but he called me like in January or something, said, man, you know, you want to do something here? And I said, well, you know, I'm kind of busy teaching. I said, but, you know, the Chicago Drum Show is happening, so maybe we can make that happen, because we could fill that house with drummers and a good audience and all that. So he was really down with that. So hopefully, we're playing at 7 on that Saturday night.
Okay.
And tickets are going well, from what I see. And it'll be my trio with John Mulder and Eric Hochberg. And I've got it listed as Paul Wertico and Friends, because I've been doing a lot of gigs, as you were talking about. Yeah. Even sometimes it's just easier to say and friends, because then it can be a quartet or a quintet. And also, I stopped using, you know, trio or quartet or quintet, because it sounds so jazzy, you know?
Right.
I mean, even a long time ago, I came up with, like, some band, Paul Wertico's Strapagander, I think, and I think I came up with Paul Wertico's Quintet thing, you know? So just playing with the name. So just coincidentally, there's a Polish label called GAD Records. It's G-A-D. And they contacted me and said, man, we just found a dat of your trio's first gig on the first trio tour that we did in Germany and Poland. Because one of the last gigs from that turned out to be live in Warsaw, which was recorded at the Aquarium Club.
Yeah.
So anyway, they sent me the dat, and it was like, you know, not perfectly recorded because it was a DAT, you know, so the guitars and drums are loud.
Yeah.
And the bass was a little under-recorded.
And there's no way to mix it.
There's not really much to do. You can EQ it, but then everything kind of affects it. But the music was so burning, and it was so, because we were exhausted. We had just gotten off the plane and then been driven like 5 hours. All of a sudden, we're in Ottobüren, Germany, and here we are going. So I said, sure, let's put it out. And so they asked me to come up with a title for it, and you know, and so I came up with the title First Date. I thought that's kind of, you know,
it's a great title.
Yeah, it's a good title. Date, it's memorable, you know, because could have said, you know, trio debut or something like that. You know, and so hopefully that's going to be out. I think they just went to press it a couple days ago. I just signed the contract.
Who was in that trio?
That's John Mulder and Eric
Cochran. Oh, they were there.
Yeah,
oh.
That's the 25th anniversary of this thing. Yeah, and I remember, you know, John sounds amazing on it. Eric sounds great on it. Eric, we didn't want to bring over an acoustic bass. I didn't want to use electric bass, so he borrowed a Clevenger bass, this electric stand-up bass. So he sounds really good at it. So it's a different sound, but you know, it's like a power trio. We're playing originals and then, you know, maybe a standard or two. But there's a couple really good drum solos. I was listening to it. One time, Vic from Vic's Drum Shop came over, and I, after a gig, I played him. And, you know, I'm just listening to him, like, who is this person? You know, because when I play, I have no idea what I'm going to do. You know, they don't have any lick. I just kind of play.
Yeah.
And it was recorded so well that I could hear all the polyrhythms and all just kind of everything that I was going for. So that would be a cool record.
Yeah.
And again, like John, like the first tune, which is John's tune, Awakening.
Well, you guys all had to be. I mean, you guys... Well, were you still with Pat Metheny then?
Oh yeah,
this was like prime time, right? You were playing a ton.
This was 94, so we, you know, all the shows were, you know, filled with people because I was with the group.
Sure.
And it's funny because on Facebook recently, a guy that I guess we're Facebook friends, he found a tape from Kassel, Germany, a year later from 95 that sounds really good.
Really?
Yeah. And so I don't know if I'll do anything with that or not. I mean, I don't even know who I've. He just seemed like he just said, yeah, just have this, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny just because there's a lot of documentation of music now for me. I mean, Howard Levy just came out with the Harmonica Jazz Quartet. So that was, you know, 1987. And then the NBV Quintet, which is No Bad Vibes Quintet. That's from 80 and 83.
Wow.
And those are great. So we just did a gig at the Green Mill in January with both those bands, and I found myself listening and studying myself, which was really kind of funny, and going, man, you know, that's pretty cool stuff. What was I thinking of, you know? So that's what's really neat. There's a lot of things that are coming out, because I'm 66 now, and I feel better than ever playing-wise. Everything's great.
You're busier than ever, too.
Which is fantastic. But it is funny. It's like, I guess as an actor or something, you would watch old films of yourself and see who you were back then, you know? And luckily, you know, I don't have to look.
Right.
We had looked back when I was in my 20s and 30s. But just hearing sort of what I was doing, the logic of what I did, things that I don't do now or that have augmented or changed or... you know, and it's really fun. It's like a documentation of your life.
Well,
that's
the thing that we talked about before we came on. Mm. So before I go the other direction, because I want to ask you this, but I want to make sure everyone knows. So on Saturday night, you're going to be at Hey Nani, May 18th?
18th, right.
Okay.
So the clinic
is
on the 18th. Then I'm going to go, you know, and set up at Hey Nani's.
Yeah.
Even though they have a DW kit there and everything, because I think Chip is a drummer.
I think so too.
And
that's what I heard.
And I remember Vic Salazar from, you know, Vic's Drum Shop had told me that, like, you know, who, Dave King from Bad Plus played there, and I think Frank Catalano, who
Frank
we're talking,
and Jimmy
played
there.
Jimmy Chamberlain. Yeah, so it's a really nice club.
You can see this trio, and then you know that this new old recording is coming out, First Date. So that's going to be a very cool combination there, and it might actually be available by then.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I asked him to try to send it to me. I mean, obviously it's going to be coming from Poland, so I don't know how long that's going to take. Sometimes that can take, you know, several weeks, overseas.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other thing with that is I'm hoping that drummers will come, because a lot of times there's like a drummer dinner after the show. And I would say, man, you guys come to Hey Nani's because they have great food. And then, you know, if there were a bunch of drummers, maybe we could even, you know, have like a, you know, crazy jam at some point, you know. Let's see.
careful what you wish for.
Well, yeah, no, that's true. That's true. But this show is going to have some really amazing drummers. Glenn Cochee is going to be there. You know, Hannah Ford's going to be there. I mean,
Hannah Ford.
Right,
that's
right. Well, she studied with me here.
That's what I was going to say.
Right,
yeah.
For 4 years. She studied with me 2 years privately, and then she came here for
She played
years.
With Prince, and she played with all those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
But the other thing I was going to say is that when you were talking about, you know, getting these recordings from 83 and all the 25 years ago, we were talking before we came on. I mean, you used to record a lot of these things too, right? Didn't you record like a lot of your gigs?
I have like cassettes of almost every gig I ever did in the late 70s, early 80s. I had a really good Sony cassette deck and really good mics, and I just recorded everything. So, I mean, I could document, you know, all the Joe Daly gigs and all, you know, all the gigs with various bands at Orphans and Colette's and at Wise Fools and all that. I could definitely, I mean, just a matter of doing it, you know what I mean? Because, first of all, transferring it over is scary because nowadays, you know, you hope that the oxide is just going to fall off the tape. Yeah, because I remember Howard Levy saying, I think he had to bake the tape, you know, just and then play it down once. And Earwax Control, I've got everything that we ever did, too.
Mm.
And Gordon James, the keyboard player at Earwax Control, ended up baking a lot of the tapes, too. Because I think he was using, like, you know, used Navy, you know, like whatever kind of tapes that are just like you just got them at some, you know, whatever.
But that's interesting. I mean, can you remember back you would record that stuff and then you'd probably go listen back to it
sure.
the next day? I mean, how important is that for a musician, since we're talking about this, to record themselves? Now it's way easier, obviously, but to record themselves and go back and really analyze what's going on, I mean, that should be a regular thing.
Should be. And you know, again, you kind of change how you feel about it over time.
Yeah.
You know, because at first you're listening to it and you have a recollection of what you just did and what just happened, and then you hear it back. I mean, hopefully it's what you thought was happening, but that can be affected by your perception or the actual sound that was captured,
or
the balance of where the mics were.
But you can hear the feel.
You can hear the feel,
right.
You can
fix things, right?
Yeah, you can hear your time, you can hear, you know, just basically if you're overplaying or you're speeding up or all those things that you work on over time to get better. And then later on, you know, sometimes, like I said, I'm listening to it and I'm really digging my own playing. I'm going like, because that was then. And you go, wow, you know, that was, yeah.
Do you know, notice like a big difference between then and now?
Well, not really. My wife said she doesn't. But the one thing I did notice on Howard's stuff too, it's like the NBV thing, we recorded one day at Steve Yates back in 1980, and it was Kelly Sill and Dave Urban and Steve Eisen and Howard and myself, and we recorded three tapes. And I remember after playing, I thought it went really well, and I remember talking to Kelly years later, and he goes, yeah, he said, no, even then, he was, yeah, you just played so different than any other drummer. And I thought, oh, cool, thanks. And when I listen to it now, I was, the whole band was dangerous. I mean, we're over the bar line, we're like, you know, I'm thinking these poor horn players have to play with this rhythm section that's just completely playing all these polyrhythms, but it's all right. It's all really good. So sometimes I think now that maybe, you know, we play really interesting ideas, maybe not as many constantly as we did back then, you know. But it's really fun to listen. And then I started going, I could hear, like, my influences, where they came from, and all that. So, you know, it's a really cool thing. The only trouble with all this stuff is that how many people are ever going to hear this, you know?
Well, that's just it, too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that turns into something where it would almost be like you digitize everything, and then it goes into like a listening archive for people to go back and study Paul Wertico specifically, and they hear everything.
Yeah, and they might not want to study me if they think, well, I'm just the Matheny drummer who plays a lot of cymbals, you know? So, which, you know, I played that music because it was great music, great musicians. I played what I thought worked for that music.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, it wasn't interactive, like dangerous interaction. It was more or less like, you know, taking and making the composition successful every night. You know, we just couldn't go out all of a sudden.
I mean,
it wouldn't have worked with that band. So a lot of times I always say that it's like an actor that gets to be known for a certain part, and then he goes on to do other things, and people don't realize that he's capable of doing other things.
Yeah.
And not only that, are you typecast, but also maybe that one thing that he did that he's known for was, you know, like with Matheny, if you sell a million records, that's a lot different than, you know, maybe pressing 100 CDs, you know.
So just a touch.
Right. So that's like a whole different
thing.
How long
were you with Pat?
Well, 18 years, basically.
18 years, yeah. And you won seven Grammys?
Seven Grammys,
with
yeah.
Pat Metheny. Yeah. So, but the thing, where I'm going with this is that you now are playing, I mean, we could run down the list. Mm. I mean, you listed it out. You're playing with Deacon Blues, Lotus King. You're playing with this jazz, that jazz, your jazz group. And I think you were doing that back then, too. You're playing with a lot of different groups in a lot of different ways. When you play with Pat Metheny, since you brought up like the cymbal thing and how you played with Pat specifically, you played to make that music good. I mean, that's what you did. And then when you play with this person, you play to make that music good. So you actually are one of those rare drummers, right, that can understand the concept of what you should be playing and how musically you should enhance that music.
That's
and
a great
that's
point.
That's really the role, right?
Well, that's what, yeah, I always tell my students that, you know, our job is to serve the music.
Yeah.
So, and luckily, you know, because I listen to so many different types of music early on, and I played so many different types, I never get bored, you know? I mean, because like Wertico Can't Gray, we're 100% improvised. We don't even talk about stuff. And then, you know, I'll go play a gig where I just have to groove, like, you know, even like, say, in the Deacon Blues, like, I'm playing Steely Dan, I'm playing Peg or whatever, you know? And Hey 19.
Killer grooves.
Yeah, and I'm totally happy with that, you know, because I love it all. And if you make the music happy, everyone's having a good time. And then, you know, obviously, then they want to work with you again. And, you know, I feel bad for people that sometimes, you know, don't get a chance to do a lot of music. So in the old days, you know, people that would try to play a polka and sound like Elvin Jones, you know. To me, I used to, in those days, try to get the dance floor packed.
Sure,
that was my job. You know, it wasn't to try to show off, like, how polyrhythmic I could be on
Somebody polka. Like you, who's toured the world and everything else, could sit there and say, hey, man, this is my sound. This is what's happening. I don't care. Yeah. Hey 19 is going to be Paul Wertico's Hey 19, man.
There is that to a point, though. I mean, like, I'll play the music to serve music, but I don't try to sound like Steve Gadd, or I don't try to sound like, you know, Rick Marotta or Jeff Beccaro on those, because I was hired to be me. I mean, they are. So as long as my concept of the way I'm going to interpret that music fits the music and the music is successful, I think that's better. Because I was never really one to try to be like anybody else but me, you know?
Right.
I loved all the different styles of music. I loved all the different drummers. And we're talking, you know, Baby Dodds up till, you know, anybody of all the different things. But when I played, people usually did hire me for whatever my take was.
Right.
And I always tell students that, you know, it's impossible to run out of ideas because the music plays you. And if you're open to it, you don't have to think about what you have to play. All you have to do is react and be part of it, and it's always different. So then your stuff is going to be different. Even if it's the same thing you play, chords are different, tempos are different, you know, lyrics are different.
Yeah. Well, you know, just to kind of focus around, since you're teaching, and we're talking about students, and I think a lot of older and younger musicians in general watch this show, and I think it'd be interesting to get your take. I'm a big believer that if you're playing, no matter what music you're playing, you need to go back and understand where it came from. So you got to understand the standards. You got to understand who started playing R&B music. How did that come? Motown and everything. What is that? How consciously did you take it, or you just love music, so you just went down the wormhole and found all these things and
kind of
studied it?
Both, because I still go back all the time. So I mean, I'm always, you know, because I teach a lot of classes here besides just, you know, teaching drums. You know, I even teach non-music major classes. I came up with one class called Social Justice Through Sound. You know, this one called Rock Music, Its Role in Society. Came up with Exploring the Blues.
Wow.
And so, you know, I love going teaching because it allows me to go back and study these different connections. And so a lot of times you do find that you know a lot about a lot of different things, but there's still fill in the blank things, and it's constantly. So I'm always, you know, in the old days you had to actually go to the library, or you had to, you know, have tons of records,
right?
All of those
like
things.
That,
but now you can just go online, and you know, sometimes, you know, it'll you'll find one thing, and then all of a sudden you'll see, oh, wait a second, this is. Okay. And look at that. It's connected. And you go, man, I had no idea that this guy played in this band for this period of time.
And then you can draw on that when you're doing your playing.
Right. And I want my students to know as much about all these things. I mean, it's a lot harder now because there's so much stuff. I mean, back when I was in college, you know, in the early part, you know, early 70s, I mean, if you think about the jazz even started in 1917, I mean, that was so, jazz was only like, you know, 60 or 70 years old. Now it's like over 100 years old. So how much music has come out since 1970s? And so, you know, you want them to learn all the things, but you also want them to be valid now, too. Because we were just talking about this recently, you know, standards. Mm-hmm. Like when I was, like, you know, their age, you know, I played with all the, I mean, I used to play, I looked at a book from 1978. I did like 14 gigs a week. I mean, I was so busy. And all with different people, all great musicians. But, you know, we knew the standards. So you had to know all the things you are, whatever. You know, and then you play a wedding and you had to know, you know, celebration or But I thought, wow, these are standards for, like, my, you know, our, my parents' generation. So now the standards are different.
Yeah.
You know? But you still, as a student, you have to know if you're going to play
Wayne,
bebop.
Wayne Shorter, for an example, those weren't standards when you were playing in
right.
the 70s.
And now
those
are.
Were, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Herbie Hancock coming out with that album, New Standards. I mean, so it's, you know, it's a lot of information to take in, but it's also really exciting because, you know, there's more things to draw on now than from ever.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about this other recording you have, Vertical Cane and Gray.
Right.
And this leads me into my other question.
Okay.
See, the segues just flow on this show,
but
man.
That's like good music. That's what music does, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
So with Vertical Cane and Gray, since we're talking about standards and all this stuff, now this is improvised music.
Mm-hmm.
So you've played, you know, R&B, rock, funk, everything else, and all that, and you're like a master of the spontaneous composition, as Rich Corpulongo has called it when he's told me about it. And
that was actually my title
for
the band.
Okay,
yes.
All right. So that makes the most sense to me, because it's like, yeah, that's what it is. You know, because people call it free jazz.
Right.
It's spontaneous composition.
Absolutely.
And if I think about it that way, I understand at least the concept of it. You're like a master at doing this, and your creativity on the drum set just blows my mind, because like we were just watching your 360 thing, and you have a sheet over the drum set,
right.
and you're getting different, but it sounds great. So how do you approach that when you sit down to do this? You know, you're playing Lotus Kings, you're playing straight ahead stuff, you're playing, now you have to just shift your whole mindset, or is it just naturally like, okay, this is what I'm going to do now?
It's pretty natural.
Yeah.
Because like if I, you know, with Lotus Kings or Deacon Blues, I mean, you know, I have to look at the music, study the charts, you know, just for the forms. I mean, because a lot of that music is pretty quirky. You know, if you listen to it, you know, there's odd bars in there and all that. And it's going to be what it's going to be. And then with Vertical Cane, great, coming from Earwax Control and Spontaneous Composition and all those, you know, that duo with Frank Catalano, you know, Topics of Conversation. I've been doing free stuff my whole life. So for me, that's just a chance like this, is just to have a conversation. And luckily, you know, Dave Kane and Larry Gray, you know Larry, obviously.
Yep.
I mean, virtuoso on pretty much everything.
Yeah.
When we play free, it still sounds like a composition. Because, you know, there's different kinds of free playing. I mean, you can just kind of make noise, and that could be cool, too. I mean, because what are you trying to convey to the audience? But for some reason, I mean, Dave Kane is really good sax player and keyboard player, great filmmaker, and he studied composition. So when we play, you know, there's cadences, there's mixed sense, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's sections that just kind of like go, and then they finish off and go somewhere else. It's just not random stuff.
That's always been my biggest thing until I started thinking of it that way. Mm-hmm. And when I think of it that way, then I can kind of tell the people that are kind of like just faking it and just like, you know, they probably can't play standards. They don't have control over their instruments, so they're creating this sound. But thinking about it compositionally, the way you're describing it, makes a lot of sense. And it just seems like you're constantly evolving that music
to me.
I mean, every time I hear you play it, it's different. Mm. But you have to have like minds with you in order to push it out there.
Definitely.
Right? I mean, so what is that like? I mean, you've played with these two guys for a long time, but I mean, do you guys sit down before you go out and say, hey,
nothing.
You just sit
nothing.
Down and say, we're going to record
zero,
an album,
zero.
That's it?
Yeah, the only thing that we ever talked about really was on the fifth CD that we did, I titled Shortcuts. I said, let's do just really, like, you know, 30-second, 40-second ones. And I had a stopwatch with me when we played. And so we recorded the whole thing in the afternoon. So, but even there, you know, a 30, 40, 50-second song, there's a beginning, middle, and end, too, which is really cool. But other than that, no, we never talk about anything.
Yeah. Well, so talk a little bit, because we're going to play a little clip of the 360 video,
Sure.
You got some video that's going to come out when everything gets released, I would imagine. So it's still in the editing thing. But you guys just basically put a 360 camera in the middle of the room, and then you can check out. You can just sit there and look at Larry if you want to.
Absolutely.
Or you can sit and look at Paul or look at Dave.
Yeah, and it depends on the format that they'll use, because, I mean, we're going to put some stuff on Vimeo and some stuff on Facebook where you can just kind of toggle. We might do like a flat one, too, where you can see all three of us done. And then we're thinking about putting out, like, maybe selling, disc thumb drives. Because the really high-res stuff is 250 gigabytes
yeah.
of this hour. It's like 63 minutes long. So we're thinking if maybe someone, it's got like a really high-res system. Because we're also mixed it to 5.1. So you
yeah.
could sit there, and especially if you have goggles or whatever. But, you can sit there and just watch this and then hear it surrounding you. Because we think, sometimes with especially, avant-garde music and stuff, sometimes it pushes the envelope musically. Usually it does. But a lot of times it's sometimes more lo-fi production-wise.
Right,
so
right.
we wanted to, Dave Kane's like a really brilliant filmmaker. He does a lot of stuff for the state of Illinois and everything. And so we really wanted to do this right, where we gave that music the best chance of people liking it as possible.
Yeah. I think that's really smart because, I mean, if you're going to go play spontaneous compositions, if you're going to play, free stuff, you're going to be playing in a smaller club mm-hmm. and things like that usually, just because audience-wise yeah. isn't there. But I have a feeling that you're onto something because social media-wise, this starts getting pushed out. And if people can listen to it the way you're talking about listening to it and sitting there and watching and looking like they're at a concert,
mm-hmm.
I think people are going to be more interested in the curiosity factor. Maybe if they saw it and said, it's just not grooving, I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
But this will be like a curiosity thing. They'll be like, I'm going to check this out. And they'll probably check it out and say, hey, this is pretty hip, man.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great idea.
And sometimes people that like sound for sound, this sounds amazing. I mean, we did it at Real Sounds in Skokie. So Mark Bruner,
mm-hmm.
We just did it there. It was so, we're so loose, just order a pizza or whatever and just, then I just record it. Yeah, and like we kept everything from that afternoon. And same with Shortcuts, all those, we kept everything.
Yeah.
Because it was all worth it, and we're pretty critical. I mean, if there's something, in the past, if something wasn't happening, say, well, maybe we won't use this. But, it's not like we had to record, 7 days and then got a half hour out of it
right,
that,
right,
that was
yeah.
listenable. And we're pretty, we're talking about like all three of us really love this type of music, so we don't want to put out anything that's kind of subpar.
Right.
And so far, the band has been growing too. I'm just talking to Larry Gray, he said, man, I can't believe how much the band itself is growing. Because we don't really get a chance to play much. I mean, Dave Kane lives in Springfield, Illinois. Larry's down at U of I a lot of times in Champaign.
Well, he's just as busy as you.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
So we get together usually just to play a gig or to record. It's not like we hang out. Dave and I talk on the phone like two or three times a day. My wife is so funny. She goes, is that your girlfriend? It's kind of the shtick because I'm talking to him as much, because we're always talking about, what we're doing sound-wise and all that. And,
mm-hmm.
Like mine's kind of just, it's so easy
sure,
to talk.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
It's been great. I've been lucky in my life to meet people that are fascinating,
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, I don't have to think about, what am I going to do because things just kind of lead naturally, which
right.
is what life is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a flow in life, just like in music or in a conversation.
Yeah, that's the concept, at least.
Yeah.
So now to switch complete gears,
sure.
you're going to Russia.
I'm going to Russia, right, the end of this month. Yeah.
So you're going to Russia, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce
okay.
the guy's name, so I'm going to let you take it over, but it sounds really interesting.
Well, I just, Roman Minichenko, he's like an amazing guitar player. So he's been, Steve Vai's been there and Coryell, all these people. So he contacted me by email just saying, hey, would you want to come? There's this World Guitar Festival that we could play. And
have you played with him before?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
so this is the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I've only Skyped with him basically
yeah.
and emailed. And then he said the bass player is going to be Dominique DiPiazza, who I've played with before. And he's like the most amazing bass player. He played with John McLaughlin. He's just, it's stunning. I've done a bunch of things with him. In fact, he actually asked me several years ago to go to Siberia and play like a week with him, but school was starting, But anyway, so
check
then.
Check the weather report
yeah,
before you go there.
but then, I have to deal with getting the visa and all these things. Because I just got back from China 3 weeks ago, too, with Fareed Haq, and that was, I had to get a visa with that, too. So this will be.
You need the work visas. I didn't even think about that.
Well, I don't even know if it's it's work visas, right? But just visas to even get in that country.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think.
A passport just doesn't do it.
I don't think you can just go there and say, hi, I'm here, you know.
Probably not anymore.
Not anymore, you know. And, you know, I've been to Russia many times. Yeah. I was there in 88 the first time when it was still the Soviet Union. And it was fascinating. And China was amazing. Beijing was incredible. We played the Blue Note. But it'll be really fun. And I think Marco Mendoza, he was like the guitar player, lead singer with Whitesnake. I think we're playing with him or something. Yeah, you know, it's going to be a pretty interesting 5 days.
So you're there for 5 days?
Yeah.
Guitar clinics and concerts and all that stuff?
I think we're only doing like 4 gigs and I come back. So, you know, so I'll land and then we'll rehearse probably a little bit that day. And then next day, we've got these concerts. Yeah. And that'll be a trip.
And then you go from there.
Yeah.
And then you come back, and then you go to Italy.
No, I come back, and then
Spain.
Spain. Yeah. So.
Sorry. So, right. Excuse me.
No. There's a guy Julio.
There's so much stuff going on. It's so crazy.
No, a piano player I did a record for, Julio Awad. He lives in Spain, and he knew this school that wanted me to do some master classes. Yeah. So I could have done it at any particular point over the summer, but. As it turns out, I wanted to fit in my schedule. So I'm going there for a week, and I'm only doing 3 days of like master classes. So then Julio said, "Well, we'll record my new record, and there's a singer that wants to, you know, you'll do her record, and then a sax player that I did a record for. We're going to do a gig now with him there. So that's all filled out. And then later on, you know, I come back and." In August, I'm playing with this Open Frontiers International project. So we've been, it's the sax player John Helliwell from Supertramp. And then this guy, Romando Melalupe, he's in a famous family. They've got like, you know, one of those, you know, like flags of their own.
He's a monarch. Yeah, okay.
So I've been playing with him on and off with this band since about 2012. And then the bass player Gianmarco Scaglia, who is in my Paul Vertigo trio that's from Italy. So that was booked in August because we have a double CD coming out. So when I was just in Italy about a month and a half ago, Gianmarco goes, well, Matt, can you come and, you know, at the end of July and then we'll just, you know, do my record and we'll play some gigs and then we'll just stay, you know, and then we'll do the Open Frontiers thing. And I said, sure. So as soon as I got home, I got contacted from Minneapolis, the drum store in Minneapolis, saying, can you do a clinic? It's like this festival. And I was like, yeah, but it's like where? It's like, so now I have to fly. So we pushed Gianmarco's thing up a little bit, and then I had to figure out a way to fly from Italy to get to Minneapolis to teach and do a clinic and then fly back to Italy. So I'm doing that. It's going to be really, you know.
A lot of flying.
Yeah. So,
but you love it, and it's all good music.
All great musicians, really nice people. I go to Italy 2 or 3 times a year now, and we have a really good trio. We put out an album called Free the Opera, where we took, you know, Puccini and Verdi and some original tunes and then some free tunes. And it's a really good piano player that's really into tango. I just did his new record too, and he's all over the world. He's always in Argentina or. Mm-hmm. You know,
did you record with him before?
I did.
Was that a different... No, you recorded a trio thing with him before or something.
Well, I did a bunch of... Well, that's the Free the Opera thing.
Okay.
His name's Fabrizio Moccata. But then there's also another piano player, there's a couple people tango-wise that I did too.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's... Yeah, it gets kind of... Mario Parmesano, who was the piano player with Al Di Meola, I did some of his record. And he's in Spain now. He moved from Argentina to Spain. So we're talking about doing like a tour next summer already, you know. And he's talking about possibly doing it like with an orchestra and with maybe Sting and Placido Domingo.
Wow.
So that's we'll see if that happens.
Yeah, right.
But he knows a lot of people and he's really well done. So, I mean, that'll be interesting if we do that. So, yeah, it's like I'm on so many records and they're all different styles. It's funny.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, but that's... You know what I mean? I mean, that's your sound. That's what we talked about when we first started talking about it.
I guess,
the different styles, and it's just music.
And you make it work, too. I mean, Fabrizio Moccata's new CD called Swango, he wanted me to do a track. So when I was, we were in Italy, last year, we stopped at some home studio between gigs, and he wanted me to record this track. So I was like, sure. So we get there, and then for some reason, the Pro Tools was not working. So they couldn't record anything. So it was like, okay, we'll come back tomorrow after this gig here, and we'll try it again. So we got there, and they finally got the thing working, and we started trying to do this track, and just the drums just sounded really bad. I mean, you know. And so rather than bag it, I also noticed that it would be better if I didn't play drums on the track. I said, so let's just record like cymbals on this, which we did, and it came out fantastic. It's better than if I were to try to play like a tango rhythm on the drum set with cymbals.
Right.
I just played cymbals, and I overdubbed like swells, and because the whole thing is just this big, like intense flowing, like waves. So sometimes, you know, the worst stuff that happens make the best stories, and sometimes things just happen in the studio. You can just give up and say, okay, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Or you say, no, let's find a solution. Sometimes the solution is actually better than the original plan. So it's just life.
It happens in life. It happens in business and music.
Absolutely.
And everything.
Yeah.
Well, we could keep talking, but I want to make sure, so we've got everything that we needed to talk about, obviously, for your upcoming couple of months. And then when you get back in town, we're going to do the feature interview where we're going to talk about Pat Metheny, about how you started playing, about all the other good stuff.
Great.
And really delve into that. But this has been amazing, and I think hopefully our viewers got a lot out of this, because I think the stuff you were talking about relates to any level of musician, number one, and of course any music fan. And I love the fact that you're playing at Hey Nani on May 18th with the same trio that you recorded with 25 years ago.
I know.
And you're putting out an album from 25 years ago, and it's probably going to be a hit. So,
well, I hope so. I mean, if nothing else, I mean, it's a good representation of what that trio sounded like at that time. You know, like I said, John sounds really amazing on it too.
Yeah.
You know, and so does Eric. But the way it's mixed, because it wasn't mixed,
right,
it was
just
you can really hear the guitar and hear the drums. I mean, so they're right out front.
Well, that's
front.
The way they would have wanted it, right?
I know, right.
Well, anyways, all right, Paul. So everybody can get more information on where you're playing, all the new releases and everything at paulwertico.com. And you're obviously on social
Facebook,
media and
sure,
Facebook all and all that
right.
stuff. And, of course, Hey Nani, May 18th, 7 p.m., I think, is when the show starts.
Right.
But you want to get tickets in advance. I know Hey Nani has a great advanced ticketing operation over there through their website. So check out Hey Nani. I think it's heynani.com.
Yeah, I have links on my website,
okay.
too. If they go to paulwertico.com, just go to schedule. And scroll down, and there's things that you'll take you right to where you can get tickets.
And then, of course, the Chicago Drum Show.
Right.
You're going to be doing a clinic and a couple of clinics there.
Well, a clinic and a master class.
Clinic and a master class.
Yeah.
And you can get all the information at rebeats.com. We're linking all that stuff up below.
Great.
And I am looking forward to sitting down and really talking about everything that we couldn't get to today when you get back from your world travels here, man.
I love, you know, hanging out with you. I mean, you've got... I'm saying, but your energy level, you know, that's what I was like, oh, let's do this. Because that's the thing with any of this stuff. I mean, we didn't even talk about that, but passion in music.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not passionate about it, I think that's what people come to see, you know, because they don't necessarily know what we're doing. They don't know what scales you're playing over what chords or what, you know, a lot of times, you know, I think sometimes with jazz, people don't even know that you actually play a melody. And then you play solos over the chords. You know,
they just think you play
a melody and then just play out there and then you come back to the melody.
Right.
You know?
You're right.
It's true.
Well,
you know?
And also, I think that a lot of musicians don't think about the fact. If you go to a movie and you see a bunch of actors up there and they are like low energy, totally lame, are you going to stay for the movie?
Right, exactly.
No, I mean, you're there. They're looking at you, you know, regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you have it down because you got the energy, and no matter what gig you're playing, you always bring it 110%. So, I mean, that's why everybody loves your playing. Yeah. I love your playing.
Thanks.
And of course,
likewise, too, man.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, if you are in Russia, Spain, Minneapolis, Chicago, or anywhere in between, you can check out Paul Wertico because he's coming to a city near you.
There we go.
And thanks for watching. Hopefully, Paul will see you on May 18th or 9th and May 18th. And hopefully I'll see you somewhere. But if we don't, hopefully we will see you somewhere soon out on the scene.